Okay, so today I plan to finish the discussion about the propagator and basically Vic theorem. And then I start to discuss perturbation theory for the interacting Phi-4 theory. Just wait a minute, door. Sorry, the door was open. Okay, so first, I taught at the last of during the last lecture at the very end when discussing how you can define phi squared, the phi squared composite operator for the free field, that it relies on the property of the Vic theorem. So let me first derive in the functional integral formalism the Vic theorem, which is something very easy. Okay, so Vic theorem. For the scalar free field, which is exactly the same theorem than the one you have learned and proved in the using canonical quantization. Okay, so let me first, in fact, introduce an object which is going to be very important in the quantization of the integral of the interacting theory, which is what's called the generating function. So remember that in the functional integral formalism, we start from an action from the free field. So the action is just S for field. And we can write it as 1/2 of integral over space time. And let me rewrite this like that, phi times the operator minus Laplacian plus n squared apply to phi. So by integration by parts, this is the very same thing than the usual form of that. It's up to boundary term, but we assume that space, we have no problem with the boundary. And here I'm working in the Euclidean formalism. So delta is d mu, d mu with the standard metric in Euclidean space, but that's going to be exactly the same thing for the theory in real time, in Minkowski spacetime. Okay, so we have seen that the path integral is somehow defined formally as some big integral Z, which is integral over the field configuration of exponential of minus 1/h-bar this action. So which I write this formally as phi in a compact way, phi times minus delta plus m squared phi. Okay, so that's a compact notation. Okay, so now we are going to introduce a slightly different object, which is obtained just by adding to this object. Well, let me rewrite it with ddx. So we'll get S of phi. And let me add to this a term that I call g times phi. So I'm going to explain what this is. So phi is a quantum field. So it's a random variable we integrate over in the path integral. G is going to be a classical field. So it's an additional external field. So G means classical function G of x for x in space-time, in Euclidean space-time. So it's called, it's a classical source term. That's a denomination. It's a source term. And of course, g dot phi means simply integral over space-time of g of x, phi of x. So this term is a linear term in the quantum field phi. So it's something like an external classical field. The quantum field. Okay. So we have just modified the functional integral by adding this external field or external function g of x. And therefore, this big path integral becomes a functional of g. So it's a, z is now a function of a function, classical function. So it's called the functional. G. Okay. So now, wait a minute, there is just some noise. Just some announcement. Okay, so now I'm introducing. So this is the first important object. And this object is, in fact, is called the generating functional of the correlation functions. Of the quantum theory. For the very simple reason that if you know this function, z of g, you can show that easily that phi of x1, phi of xn, the expectation value of the quantum field in the quantum theory given by this action can be obtained just by taking functional derivative with respect to g. J, that's a J. I'm always confused between the pronunciation of J with respect to G, which is in English is the opposite of French. So this is J. So this J, if you take a functional derivative with respect to the value of the source term G at point X1, in this exponential, you get just phi of x1 with a function of h bar, which falls beyond the exponential, you see. So if you repeat the operation, n times, once for each point at which are located one of those quantum field operators, well, you get this up to a factor, h bar to the power minus n. So basically what you get is that this is h bar n times z of g. But then you have to normalize just by z of g and set G to zero at the end. So you compute this big functional derivative. Okay. So this object is just another way to write the functional integral definition of the expectation value or correlation function of a product of n field. That's very general. There is nothing deep. It's just another way to write in terms of functional derivative. The definition of this, which was given last week. Okay. So now the interest of this is that this generating functional, you can compute it exactly. You can compute this g of g since the action is Gaussian. We can compute, how can we compute E of G? Well, you just make a transformation in the field phi. So change the integration variable from phi into phi minus delta plus m squared, the inverse of these operators, apply to G. So I just make a change of variable. Or if you prefer, change from variable phi in the functional integral into phi tilde, which is this is the relation between phi and phi tilde. Okay, that's the inverse of this operator. This is the object which is inverse of this operator. And instead of being applied to the function phi, it's applied to the function g. You see, it's just a notation of inverse operator. Okay, so now since this is a linear transformation in phi, it's just you shift phi by a constant, the measure doesn't change. D of phi is equal to D of phi tilde. That's a crucial point. Okay. And if you write this, this is a announcement. This is the time where we have to stop to work in Saclay. Okay, that's done. Okay, so if you make G change a variable, rewrite it here, and you get immediately that the functional integral becomes S of phi tilde times this change of variable absorbs this term. So you get that Z of G is just the integral without any G, so the linear term has disappeared, times exponential of, and you get just a plus 1/2 divided by h bar. There is always an h bar, 1/2 h bar times the integral of a term which is quadratic, which is g times this object. So this can be rewritten. Let us write it precisely. dx1, dx2. Well, no, let me just rewrite it. This is g times the inverse operator minus delta plus m squared times g. Of course, with a factor minus one, because here on this phi, I get minus delta plus m squared minus one. If I rewrite V like that, I get this term, and I get a plus term. So this is the expression for the generating functional for Z of G. And from this, so you see that this is now the generating function as a function of G is just an exponential in the classical field, the classical source term G. And we can very easily perform the functional derivative. Oh. And in addition.
Excuse me, sir.
Yes.
Just maybe it's worth to say that it does not depend on the fact that we choose the Klein-Gordon operator. I mean, the demonstration that you did, we can also do it with adding indices with spinners and so on. So maybe
yes,
just
yes. No, no. It's just use the fact that the action here is quadratic in phi. So it's a field times a quadratic form times a quadratic, yeah. A linear operator acting on phi, and we get the inverse of the operator.
Yeah, so it's fully
general. Yes, yes, yes. So it's very general. So for instance, in fact, you can play the same game. We are going to do that a bit later. For the Dirac field, well, with the caveat that the Dirac field is an anti-commutating field, but if you replace phi by a spinor and this Klein-Gordon operator by a Dirac operator, That's the same thing. And you are going to get here the inverse of the Irac operator, which is the operator, which is the propagator. So you are right. And that's going to work. Okay. So from this, we get now that in addition, the Z of zero is going to cancel with the Z of G at Z equals zero. It's a denominator. So we get that finally, pi of x1, pi of x2, pi of xn is just given up to factor h bar to the power n by delta over delta g of x1, delta over delta g of xn, so n functional derivative of an explicit function of the Gaussian function of g. Okay. So, and once you have done that, you set g equals to zero. You first take the functional derivative, and then you set the source term to zero. Okay. So if you had only two terms, you have two derivatives. You see? So one derivative is going to drop down a minus delta plus n squared minus one of g in front of this big exponential. And the second derivative can only act on the remaining g that fall down. Otherwise, it gives a term which vanishes at g equals zero. Okay. So if you compute the propagator, phi of x1, phi of x2, the functional, you have two delta over delta g at g equals zero. And what you get is just this object, minus delta plus m squared minus one. Well, the matrix element between x1 and x2, which is g0 of x1 one minus two. So that's another way to derive the propagator. But you can play this for when you have four, for instance. If you have phi of x1, phi of x2 up to phi of x4, so phi of x3, phi of x4, then the first one gives basically a minus delta minus delta plus n squared g time exponential one half of g minus delta plus n squared g, the first. The second one either acts, so let's act with the phi four. So you get this, the matrix element at point four of this. Well, this is invisible. At point x4, exponential one half of g minus one g. The first one gives this one. The second one either acts on this and gives a minus delta plus m squared x3 x4, or minus delta plus m squared x three applied to g times the minus delta plus m squared g, the matrix element x four of this one, and then the remaining times exponential plus one half of g, this operator the propagator G, and the remaining two functional derivatives, either they act on this one or they act on this one. And so what you get is that finally you get the propagator, this is minus one, of course, x3, x4 times the propagator minus one, x1, x2, if you act there. Or, no, I'm sorry, you get, if you act there, this is, you cannot. You get this. So finally, you get this one plus this one. x3, x1 times minus one, x4, x2. Or you get the propagator x3, x2 plus the propagator x4, x1. So you get three terms, and you make explicitly this functional derivative, those four functional derivatives, and you get precisely the four possible pairs of propagator you can get out of the four points. So you get precisely 1, 2, 3, 4 plus 1, 3, 2, 4 plus 1, 4, 2, 3. If you use this standard notation, diagrammatic notation, and you represent the propagator, if you represent the propagator, phi of x1, phi of x2, by a line that joins two points at x1 and x2. So this is Vick's theorem in the Feynman diagrammatic representation. And it's obtained just by computing explicitly this generating functional and adding source terms and making computing explicitly the derivation, the derivative with respect to G of a Gaussian. You see. Okay. Okay, so that's one of the simple way to derive Vick's theorem out of functional integration. And I realize I'm black here. And this is going to be very useful later in the course. Okay. So once we have done that, in 5 minutes, let me come back to what I discussed last time, which is how you can define a composite operator, phi squared, out of the field operators. Let's discuss how we have this composite operator, phi squared of x, which is not defined just as a product of the two fields. So we have seen that we have defined, well, in shorthand notation, the normal ordered or normal product operator in canonical quantization. We define this as formally the products of two operators at the same point minus the expectation value in the vacuum of the operator at each point times the identity operator, the operator one at point x1. You see? So we have seen that this is formally, this contains short distance singularity. So because basically you can define this as the limit when we have two points x1 and x2, and you let them converge into a double point x here. So you let the two operators converge at the same point, and you define this as a limit of this product of two fields minus the expectation value in the vacuum of the product of two fields located at the point x. You see? How can you see that this operator is well defined? Well, you can just compute, for instance, the expectation value of this phi squared of x at an origin point x zero. In, you compute the correlation function of this operator with two ordinary fields. Well, then we can just apply Vick's theorem. So Vick's theorem for this one, you have phi of x1, phi of x2 times phi of x times phi of x. So you have a point x1. So you have a point x1. We have a point x2. And we have an operator with two phi at point x. You see? Okay, what does Vick's theorem tell you? It is that this is, it is a product when you make this contraction plus this pairing x1, x2, x plus this pairing and this is problematic because it's a propagator at coinciding points. So this is a divergent. But those products of propagator are well defined as long as x1 and x2 and x do not coincide. So this is well defined. Well, now, you have to add to this, or rather to subtract, the propagator phi of x1, phi of x2, expectation value, times expectation value of phi of x squared. So you have to subtract to this, this term, which is, of course, expectation value of phi of x1, phi of x2, times the expectation value of phi of x at the same point, which is precisely given by this diagram with this divergent amplitude. And you see that this definition of a composite operator by subtracting to this, this precisely makes those two terms cancel.
Excuse me?
Yes.
Can you explain what is happening in the second? I cannot understand your second drawing.
Pardon?
The second one, the second diagram, yeah. No, the second. I mean the second before this one? Yes, this one. Yes,
exactly. Oh, it's just because here you see I'm computing, I'm applying Vick's theorem when I want to compute phi of x1, phi of x2, phi of x zero, phi of x zero. Oh, I'm sorry, this is what I call x zero here. And I call it x. So when you count the number of pairings, you have one pairing, which is this one. Okay. Another pairing, which is this one. And the third pairing, which is the one which gives this diagram, which is this one. This one gives phi of x1 times phi of x0, the expectation value from Vick's theorem, so it is this propagator, while phi of x2 times phi of x0 gives this one. This one gives, in fact, the same quantity, because that's phi of x1 times phi of x0 expectation value times phi of x2 times phi of x0 expectation value. So those two diagrams, that's they are equal. They are just, so you just get 2 times psi of x1, psi of x0, that's a propagator, times phi of x2, times phi of x0. And that's because there is a symmetry. You can change
you was mostly because of the drawing. I was confused about the drawing, but okay, it makes sense.
Yeah, it's just a drawing that I just separated the 2 points, but in fact, and then if you separate the 2 points and then you let them come close, you get that.
Yep, makes sense. Thanks.
Okay, so it has a 2 factor 2. Okay. Okay, but this works if you want to compute more complicated correlation function. For instance, that's an exercise, but I think there are drawings in my lecture notes. But if you take 4 operators times phi squared, then you get the sum of all possible diagrams except those which contain these diagrams. So basically, in general, these rules means that you, when you construct the expectation value of phi squared properly defined times some phi, you get the sum over all possible pairings, but without the contribution which comes from phi of x, phi of x, if you have here phi of x zero, which is subtracted by this term. It's easy to see. So basically, this rule subtracts the ultraviolet divergence. Okay, so you subtract the dangerous diagram which is represented by this diagram. And you have defined otherwise a perfectly well-defined, well, quantum operators, because all its vacuum expectation value with other field operator are well-defined. So in other sense, this operator has completely well-defined and ultraviolet finite matrix element. So it's a well-behaved quantum operator. But you need this operation of subtraction. And this operation of subtraction is the first and simple example of what is called renormalization theory, how to deal with the ultraviolet short distance properties of the theory, which are feature of the theory. So they are not proof of evidence of inconsistency of a quantum theory of field, but they are just at that level, at least for the free field, evidence that the high energy or short distance behavior of the theory is very different from the behavior of a classical theory or a theory which would be non-relativistic. So you need those subtractions. You need subtraction. And this is equal to renormalization. Okay, so now I think I'll stop that. Those composite operators have very interesting properties, and you can see that those composite operators have themselves non-trivial short distance property. So if you take 2 phi squared operators and they come close together, then the additional singularity coming from the behavior of those 2 phi squared operators. So there are new divergences coming when you take 2 phi squared So you have a phi squared here. You have a phi squared here. And we try to make them close together to build a phi squared squared operator. This operator is ill-defined. And you need an additional subtraction to construct a proper normal ordered or normal product of four fields, which would be a phi four operator. New divergence. But I'll stop there because I want to start discussing the interacting theory. But this is going to be important when studying renormalization of phi four theory. Basically, keep this in mind because that's going to be important for the interaction theory. Okay. So now.
François, just a brief question. Is there any relevance to J being a classical field configuration in terms of how we define functional derivatives? Anything to say on this?
Yes. Well, no, it's crucial that it has to be a classical field because you need to define functional derivative. And functional derivative means just, well, in a naive physicist setting, but of course there is a mathematical theory which is called functional calculus. Functional derivative are derivatives with respect to the value of a function at some point. But you consider derivatives of a function of some classical real variables. I don't know any way to define what is a derivative with respect to a quantum variable. Maybe it's possible in some quantum geometry setting, whatever. But in quantum mechanics, for instance, you never define what is the derivative with respect to the position operator at a given point. Mm-hmm. You can define, for instance, the velocity operator as the derivative with respect to classical time, or you can define more complicated. You can define, for instance, an operator which is the gradient of a quantum field at a given point of space-time by taking the derivative with respect to the position of the operator in space. But the position is a classical variable. So it's crucial mm-hmm. that it has to be, it makes a job. This source term is introduced to make the job, in fact. And it has to be classical because it allows to define functional derivatives and compute using those functional calculus rules. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so let me stop there. Well, I spent a good half an hour, but that's useful. And now let me start the quantization of introduced interactions. So I'm going to treat the simple example that you have seen already, I think, in QFT1 theory as a warming up exercise for QED, but it's important in many physical settings, which is what is called the phi four interacting scalar field. So the phi four interacting scalar field. Well, let me just take my notes in order not to make mistakes with the. It's just given by an action, so we still consider a phi a scalar field, a real scalar field, and the action now that is the interaction. You start from the action of the free field. d mu phi squared plus m squared phi squared. This is a free field. And we had a term which contains a phi 4 field. Again, I'm for simplicity writing in the Euclidean setting. This time. Okay, but you can play the same game in Minkowski spacetime. You just have to have the proper signature of spacetime. And well, this is, I'm going to explain what kind of interaction this is, but you have to introduce some coupling constant, which gives you the strength of the interaction. And usually it's denoted either lambda or g. So I think in my notes I use gg. So I use the g, and for some practical reason, one always had a factor, a normalization by factorial of 4, which is 24. Yeah, so that's a normalization. And g is a complex constant, that's the strength of the interaction. Okay, so this is, okay, so why phi to the 4? Well, that's the simplest case which respects the symmetries of the theory. So because this action is, you can change the sign of the interaction. So it's this phi fourth the term, it's local in the field, it's local. It's symmetric when you change phi into minus phi. Otherwise you could have a phi to the power 3 theory. And it's simple. Okay. And you may ask, what does it correspond to? Well, I think you have seen in QFT1 the courses, but in the same way that the free theory is a free boson, of mass m, so the propagator describes the particles moving with a mass m. Okay, so that's basically the propagator describes the free propagation of bosons. And when you compute the correlation function, you compute the quantum amplitudes that the free boson is created from the vacuum at some point and annihilated somewhere else. Well, phi squared basically gives you what is a density of bosons at a given point in space-time. When you compute the expectation value of phi squared, that's a density of bosons. Remember, bosons can accumulate at some points, basically, at some density of boson. So what is phi to the 4? Phi to the 4 is an energy term which is proportional to the square of the density. It's somehow so if you have an energy which is proportional to the square of the density, where the density is basically the number of particles you have at a given point in space-time, which means that you have an energy which involves local interaction between two particles. So phi 4 describes basically a contact interaction between two bosons. Boson because it's a square. And well, remember, this is a potential energy of a boson. And therefore, G, the sign of G measures the sign of the interaction. So G positive means repulsive interaction, because it increases the energy if you have several bosons at the same point. While G negative means an attractive interaction.
So the action yes. has kinetic minus potential. Yeah.
So I'm working in the Euclidean space time. So remember, the Euclidean action, remember, in general, is a kinetic energy plus potential energy in Euclidean time, while the action at the Minkowski space is kinetic minus potential. Mm-hmm. Since here I wrote everything in terms of Euclidean space-time, here it's positive. Okay?
Yeah. It's just got it, yeah.
That's it, nothing special about mm-hmm. It just reminds that I'm working in Euclidean space-time just to have no a bit nasty I factor and signs, etc. Okay.
Professor,
yes.
Question. So where does the interpretation of phi squared as density come from again? So from creation annihilation operators, right? Or
yes, you can view that. You can view that just in canonical formalism by working in annihilation operator. Remember that phi basically is given as some a plus some a dagger. Well, with of course coefficient depending on the momentum of the mode and the energy. Okay, so phi squared basically contains some a plus a dagger. Well, I'm using the commutation relation to not have the a dagger a. Okay, and when you compute phi squared energy, expectation value in the vacuum, well, you get zero. But this gives zero because you know that A of the vacuum is zero. Okay, and you know that therefore A dagger of the vacuum, you know that zero A dagger is also zero because that's the conjugate of this vector. Therefore, those two terms disappear. And basically, the expectation value of phi squared is, of course, a sum over the modes with the normalization of the modes, but basically that's zero a dagger zero, you see. So a dagger creates one boson, a annihilates one boson. So basically, this is a density. That's a number of particles. So that's basically the average of the number of bosons. Okay, that's very sketchy, but work out with the modes and compute at a given point in space time, and you get precisely the number of bosons at a given point of space time.
Yeah, but that's in free theory, right? But even though we have...
That's in the free theory, yes. But now, you know, if you assume that G is small, you view it as a small perturbation and see at first order, what does this interaction represent? And at first order for very small coupling, it corresponds to an interaction between bosons. In other words, take this picture of, in the same way than in QED that you studied in QFT2, in the same way that in QED, you have an interaction term, which is basically a psi bar gamma mu a mu psi, where this is a electromagnetic vector potential, and this is related to creation and annihilation operator of a Dirac fermions, and therefore this interaction term represents the interaction of of Dirac fermions interacting with a boson. That's a Dirac, and that's a photon. Okay. In the same way, in phi 4 theory, this phi 4, I'm sorry, the phi 4 operator is going to correspond, and we are going to see that in the perturbative rules, and you have seen it in QFT one, I think, already, that basically this is represented by an interaction vertex, which is local at a given point in X, where you have a boson. Boson, when they touch each other, they repel each other with a strength, with an amplitude proportional to G. So basically, it's a billiard ball theory of quantum billiard balls. Repulsive. Point-like particles. And it's very simple because there is no spin, there is no momentum, so it's really a repulsive local. While it's a bit more complicated in quantum electrodynamics because the interaction depends on the charge and on the spin, because the Dirac particle has a spin, the fermions has a spin, the photon has a polarization, and the interaction depends on the way they coupled. That's what the Dirac algebra does. Okay. So this is an interaction which is simpler than in case of QED. There is no charge and no spin. Okay. Okay. Okay, so let me come back to this interaction. And now, of course, how to quantize this theory using functional integral? Well, it's easy. We just apply in a, you know, we turn the crank of the Marcuccini. So we define the partition function. By a functional integral quantization, by defining a partition function, which is just an integral over d phi of exponential minus. Well, let me keep h bar. And here I had again this action f of phi. And this action, of course, is a classical action plus g over phi f4. So I can write this as s0 of phi plus g over 4 factorial integral of phi 4. This is just a compact way to write integral over d dx of phi 4 of x. Okay. And that's formally, we define the partition function in this way. Now you may ask the question, well, what kind of measure should we take? So as just a receipt to construct a quantum theory, you take just the same measure than in the classical, in the free theory. So both here and here. This is the measure, and this is the action of the free theory. And this is the interaction term. Okay. And of course, Now, well, you can define a generating function. I'm going to write that later. But then how do you define expectation value? Of operators, namely the correlation function, the vacuum expected, the vacuum to vacuum matrix element of operators in this theory. Well, you have to remember that in this theory, the vacuum state, let's call it omega, is not the same way as the vacuum state of the free theory. That's, for instance, what calculation in the canonical formalism shows us, showed you. So this is the vacuum of the free theory. This is vacuum state of the interacting acting theory. In fact, as a vector in some input space, it's a different vector than the state of the vacuum theory. And it depends on G. The strength of the interaction. Okay, so in fact, but you know, the receipt of doing performing functional integration or path integral quantization doesn't depend in a precise way of the form of the action. When you compute, you have to do. So basically, we expect that when you compute expectation value of products of field operator in the interacting theory, let me write a G here for interacting. Well, we can just write it as a functional integral with this action, exponential of minus 1/h-bar S of phi. This is the full interacting theory, and times phi of x1 up to phi of xn. And you have to normalize in order to get a properly normalized vacuum expectation value, d0 of phi exponential minus 1/h-bar s of phi. So this is the definition of the expectation value of a product of operator in the interacting theory. Okay, I wrote it here in the Euclidean setting. But if you apply the standard rule of Vick rotation, you are going to get the vacuum, the expectation value in the vacuum state of the interacting theory, which depends on the coupling constant, of the time ordered product in the interacting theory of the products of operator phi of x1, phi of xn. So this is the vacuum state of the interacting theory, which depends also on the coupling constant. You see? So it's just what we expect from the rules of functional integral quantization. Okay, and of course, one can perform the same trick than what I did for the free field. You can define a generating functional by adding to this term a source term of the same thing, of the same form, G times phi. And get those expectation value of products of operator by functional derivative with respect to this generating functional. But of course, this is much more difficult to compute because here the action is not a quadratic form in phi. So it's not a Gaussian integral. This is an, in a very complicated, difficult functional integral. And therefore you cannot compute it exactly. And as we'll see next time, you can only compute it by in perturbation theory by performing a series perturbative expansion in powers of the Kuplik constant G. So we are going to repeat, one can repeat rather, in fact, well, easily as far as the rules of expanding are given. One can expand in terms of this parameter G, assuming that it's a formal small coupling parameter, do a formal perturbative expansion as a series of this exponential of G over four, repeat the same, apply the Wick theorem in exactly the same way that you did using canonical formalism and get the Fan-Mal diagrammatics of the phi-4 theory using this functional integral quantization. But I'll stop there and we'll see that during the next lecture, where I try to go, as you, well, I will assume that you are already familiar with the rules of, you know, Feynman diagrammatics that you derived in canonical quantization, because that's the same principle of calculation, and to focus more on some a bit more advanced property coming from the generating functionals. Is that okay? Okay, thank you.
Professor, what is the difference yes? between free measure and interacting measure?
Well, here I take the same measure than the free measure. You could take, in some sense, you could see that this term, okay, plus this term is still a local measure. Because you see, here you have, we have seen that d phi in the last lecture is formally okay. Okay, this d zero of phi is formally products over x of d of phi at the point x. Well, this requires a proper regularization, for example, the lattice to make sense of it or whatever. But formally, this is just a local measure. Well, here you have the exponential of the free action times the exponential of the interaction term. So you can write the interaction term as exponential of, well, there is a minus one over, well, let's go G over H bar times factorial four times integral over X of by four of x. Okay. Formally, you have the exponential of integral, so you can write this. Well, that's way formal, but something like products over x of exponential. You see, dx is a sum. Products over x of an exponential of some factors times power of 4x. I'm not going to write this factor because in fact it's full of infinity, but whatever. Formally, you see, this is just a product of x of some function of the value of the field at point x. It's just the exponential of something times phi 4 of x. So it's a non-linear function of x, but phi 4 to 4. So you can rewrite this terms times this terms like products over x of d phi of x times exponential. So it's still a local measure. So you can view the interaction as a modification of the measure, as well as a modification of the action. That's just two different ways to view the interaction. But it doesn't bring more insight or less insight than viewing it as a modification of the action. In some sense, in the quantum theory, in fact, what makes sense is this. The quantum measure is a functional integral. And simply the quantum measure of the free theory without interaction is much simpler than the quantum measure of the interaction theory, but they are both quantum measures.